The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Hey, State Nation, what's going on, everybody? Happy Thanksgiving. This is another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, all about the latest and what's going on around the campus. None other than Kansas State University, the Kansas State Wildcats, here on this holiday week. And hope everyone is having a good, happy Thanksgiving when this podcast rolls out on game day on Friday. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas, home of the Purple Project Podcast. Again, find us podcast wherever podcasts are found. We're on Apple, Spotify, Audioboom, Amazon, and a couple more outlets out there as well. The Purple Project Podcast rolling into the end of the college football season, at least for K-State anyways, in the end of November. Not messing around. Time to bring home my co-host, as usual, for the weekly edition, episode 72 of Triple P, Alex, who's out there, out west in San Diego. Alex, what's happening?
Oh, not too much, Eddie. Not too much going on over here. First off, hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. I believe people will be hearing this after Thanksgiving, but it'll still be part of the Thanksgiving weekend. So have a great Thanksgiving, or I hope you had a great Thanksgiving and enjoy the long weekend. Whenever Eddie's putting this out, and yeah, Eddie, lot to talk about. We don't lack content this week. I will say that we did see my streak for the football team end. I had the schedule, the win loss perfect until the Baylor game. I ended up winning that Baylor game, and they lost it for my preseason pick. So I am now one game off. But I did have them losing to Texas to end the season, and maybe they'll win that, and they'll end up with the same record that I predicted before the season began, which was 8-4. So we will see, and we always have plenty to break down and football, as we saw an interesting game against Baylor last week. But really, we have a lot to talk about in basketball because, K-State against two top 15 teams and Kansas City. And, you know, I really don't know what to think, Eddie. I'm not sure if I should be encouraged or if I should be discouraged or what. But I think my big takeaway, and we'll dive into this obviously more, and I'll dive into it more as well. But for K-State, losing these two games to two top 15 schools, it's not going to break. The season's not broken. It's not going to break their season. Would you like to see them win a game? Yes. Is it the end of the world? They lost both of them? No, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. It was a single-digit game in both games. With that said, though, they're not moral victories. I don't take these as moral victories. Moral victories are not going to get K-State where they need to get this year. We have expectations for this team to be, in my opinion, a bubble team on the verge of the tournament, or just in the tournament, or in the NIT. And if they don't get any of those places, then that's not a successful season. And I've been very clear from the beginning. If they don't do those things, Bruce needs to go. He needs to go, absolutely. And so I'm not going to get into that can of worms right now because we don't need to. We're only four games of the season. But the point is they're going to have to win games like this. Moral victories might have worked last year. We could sit there. We could talk about how well K-State played Baylor in the Big 12 tournament. They did. They played Baylor very well. But you got to find a way to win some of those games this year because, hey, you know, we played them close. That's not going to give K-State where they need to get. So hopefully they can learn from these two games against Arkansas and Illinois, and they can use those experiences to prepare them for the games that they now need to win on the schedule, which I would include Wichita State. Need to win that game now, in my opinion. Marquette. I'm not going to say you need to win against Marquette because they're a top 25 team as well, but it would be good. It would be a very good for K-State, though, if they could get that game against Marquette. And they need to beat Nebraska on the road now. I think that's a game that they need to get to. And I think they need to win their Big 12 SEC Challenge game, which I can't even remember who that's against.
I think that's Texas A&M.
Yeah, it's Ole Miss. It's Ole Miss.
Oh, no, yeah, Ole Miss. Yep, that's right. Yep.
It's Ole Miss.
My bad. Ole Miss.
I get it. They play Texas A&M like every year. So I
would just
do the same thing. But in my opinion, they need to beat Ole Miss, you know. So, you know, you didn't need to lose those games. I mean, win those games necessarily. They weren't must wins, but for K-State to be able to build their resume the way they're going to need to do it, they're going to need to beat Wichita State and Wichita. They're going to need to beat Ole Miss. They're on the road. They're going to need to beat Nebraska on the road. I mean, they're going to need to get those games, and they're going to need to try to get Marquette. I mean, you know, that's just kind of the reality of it, because if they can't do that, it's going to be an uphill climb for them. It's going to be an uphill climb for them because you look at the Big 12, you got three teams in the top 10. I mean, you got Baylor, Texas, KU, and that's six games already against those teams. That's a third of your Big 12 schedule. So, look, it's going to be asking an awful lot that can't get it. So, not the end of the world. Hopefully, K-State can loop good large drama. There's some things to take that are encouraging from those. Some things to take that are discouraging. But there's no doubt that not being able to get a game in Kansas City has kind of narrowed things a little bit for K-State. And they definitely need to be sure they take care of business in the games coming up. But lots to talk about. And then also, Cal is hurt again. So we'll get to talk about that too. So. We're not lacking content, as I told you, coming off the pod.
No, we're not, and we're just going to go ahead and continue that conversation with men's basketball. Yeah, you mentioned it. Three Big 12 teams inside the top 10. Two of them just got done playing. Baylor taking care of Arizona State. Baylor, sixth in the country. Basketball, we're talking about right now, folks, on Triple P. And then Texas taking care of California something Baptist 68-44. Oklahoma not ranked took care of Houston Baptist tonight 57-40. Iowa State took care of 25th ranked Xavier. How about that? In the upset NIT preseason 82-70. They are upset city already early. And then a game that's going on while we're recording this podcast. I know this will be out on game day Friday. Pepperdine beating TCU right now. It just changed. Pepperdine just made a free throw, 20-16 right now early in the first quarter. So it doesn't help that the rest of the Big 12, I know TCU's losing at the moment, but the rest of the Big 12 is winning, and you can't win a game in Kansas City. And I'm in the same boat as you are. Now, I know I'm bouncing all over the place now. K-State lost to Arkansas and Illinois by a combination of 16 points. Eight. In each game. It doesn't help when you start off slow against Arkansas. You trail big at the half, but you make a big run in the second half. The game falls short. And I was hoping, and I said this on the day that actually just came out a couple hours ago, I was hoping that the K-State would carry that momentum in the Illinois game. And at one point in this game, Illinois game last night, K-State took the lead, I think, by two or three points. This was the first time that I sat down and watched this K-State team. And, okay, I thought we're going to have ourselves a little bit of a game contest here. But, again, Illinois was just too much in the second half of that game. And, of course, Wildcats had to
make it. Coburn is just insane.
Yeah, he was huge.
Tell me who's stopping him this year.
Yeah, he was huge in that game there. Obviously, 23 I think for him, and then off the bench, Plummer had added 21 for K-State last night.
Great.
Yeah, he was wonderful last night for K-State. How about Marquise Noel, 19 off the bench. last night. Nigel Pack, 15 points, and then Ish Masood added 13 as well. You don't get anything from Miguel. Mark Smith only had 4 points there. Mike McGurl off the bench, 22 minutes of action, had 5 minutes there as well. Kusupi at 2 minutes. Davion Bradford, 18 minutes and only 2 points. Yeah, off the bench. So yeah, you gotta have at least one more player to be in double digits there. And who knows, maybe K-State pulls that off there. But yeah, just the story of this tournament really is the outside shooting. And this goes back to what we've been saying, even going back to episodes last year, the three-point ball. The three-point ball not falling down. And I think at one point, I don't have to tweet up. I think Tim Fitzgerald tweeted something of the statistics anyways. I believe several people tweeted it out. At one point, well, actually here, I have the game up here. This game stats, 6 of 21 from downtown, 28% against Illinois. That's not gonna cut it. And then you flip over to Arkansas. Both these teams were really terrible from downtown. Let me flip it here. The numbers.
3 of 21 from the field.
Arkansas. 3 of 22, 13%. And then K-State, the same thing. It's literally the same.
Okay, I thought it was.
You're close. It's literally the same thing.
Nine for 44 from three in two games.
That is, yeah, that's terrible. And that's not going to win games either there. Yeah, Nigel Pack and Selma Miguel had 14 each, going back to the 13th Arkansas game. Marquise Noel was probably the more consistent. Mike McGurl added 9. Noel was in double digits as well, so he's kind of been that spark off the bench for K-State, 10 points, 3 of 7 shooting, 1 of 3 from downtown as well in that game. So, yeah, it doesn't help that you're up against it. Everybody else is winning while you're losing in KC. Now the pot. You wish that they took one of those games. Which one? I don't know. Maybe for me, in my opinion, they're in the Illinois game until they kind of fell apart a little bit in that second half of that game. So, but yeah, I'm on the same fence. I need more. I need to see a little more. Hopefully, K-State can take care of business and get some of those key critical non-con games, what you're talking about.
Yep, exactly. And to go into those, first off, for anybody wondering, Arkansas did end up beating Cincinnati in a championship game. And so the way that K-State and Illinois ended up playing, for those who don't know, was Cincinnati holding a jump set on Illinois, and that's how they got the championship game, and Arkansas went on to win that game. I think it would have been, when I was imagining K-State in this tournament, I was saying I'd be happy if they could get one. I thought that it would include Cincinnati somewhere. So the fact that K-State ended up going up against Arkansas and Illinois, I did not see them going up against both those teams because I thought that would have meant they had to beat one of those teams, and I didn't think that was going to happen. So that was just about the worst break that they could get. They got the two best teams, in my opinion. And granted, yeah, Cincinnati did pull the upset on Illinois. They really clobbered them. But let's not confuse ourselves. Illinois is still, in my opinion, the better basketball team. They were the one seed last year. They're the ranked team. They've got the potential player of the year on their team. I mean, let's not kid ourselves there. But when you look at the games, Eddie, I think when you want to look at a positive is K-State got better over the two games. They played a horrible half of basketball against Arkansas, but they were down 18 at half, and they did everything wrong that you could think of in the first half. In the second half, they cut that game to really more of a half-court game, and they played more of their pace, and they were able to make a run. They played better defensively. They were able to force Arkansas into some ill-advised decisions, and they got some looks. They didn't make a lot of those looks, but they did get some looks, and they got some better looks, and they at least had some better movement, and they were able to make a run. And it never, to me, felt like K-State could win that game, but they were still there, like within arm's reach, down the stretch. And so they were at least better in the second half, and they showed some promise. And in the Illinois game, I thought they just played much better, period. I thought they played a lot better against Illinois than they did against Arkansas. I thought that they moved the ball better. I actually thought they shot the ball a little bit better. And they did a really good job of not turning the ball over. I think K-State only had like 4 turnovers in the game against Illinois. I think they forced like 18 turnovers or something. It was well into the teens in turnovers they forced in Illinois. So they were forcing turnovers to their defense. So they were doing some nice things, and that's what got them a lead against Illinois. And they were leading in the second half. They were leading like 10 minutes to go against Illinois. What happened in that game was, at some point, and this is kind of how I felt, I felt like Illinois is the most talented team in this tournament. I thought at some point their talent was going to prevail, and they were going to pull away. And I was just waiting for that run, and I tweeted it when they finally went on a run, and they got up 9. I said, I was waiting all night for that. Finally did it. It's going to be too much for K-State to overcome. And it was. They could. They lost by 8. And they just couldn't make that up. But I was just waiting. Illinois, they're just too good. I thought eventually they would just make a run to get enough separation. And they were able to do that. And that's kind of was the difference there. And it came back to offense. For K-State, they just couldn't click in shots consistently in that game. But look, if you want to look for a positive, K-State got better. They got better over the 2 games in Kansas City, and they played competitive basketball against a team that went to the Elite Eight last year and another team who was a 1 seed last year in the NCAA tournament. 2 really good basketball teams. 2 basketball teams who are ranked in the top 15 right now. I think that's is encouraging that K-State, this time last year, K-State was losing those games by 30, by 40. I mean, they were getting their asses handed to them by teams like that. They're not. They're clearly, K-State's a better basketball team. I think that you can tell that. They do, believe it or not, they do have more scorers, as hard as it is to believe. They do have more scorers. They seem to be better on the defensive end, and they seem to be a little smarter, a little more disciplined as well. With that said, there are also some deficiencies that are pretty concerning, Eddie. And if you mentioned, it starts with offense. They are not moving the ball the way they need to move it. It is way too stagnant. There's not enough ball movement. And what's happening is a lot of guys are shooting contested threes. And that's why they're not making a lot of them, Eddie. It's not just that they're shooting threes. A lot of them are bad looks. They're not good looks. They're low percentage threes. You're not gonna make many low percentage threes, especially when you don't have sharp shooters on your roster. And you don't have guys who can necessarily create their own shot the way that Nigel Pack can do. I think Nigel Pack is probably the best shot creator on the team. Maybe one of those transfers will take that spot, but Nigel Pack seems to be the one guy that seemed like he was able to create some shots for him. And even when he does that, it's usually inside the arc as well, too. So it's just, you've got to move the ball better. You've got to only take open threes. I get it. K-State's kind of in a bind. Damian Bradford, he's had pneumonia. He's not full strength. So you're relying on Iziegu down low. And he's also battling a little bit with a knee thing, too. And so I get it. You're not a full strength down low, so it's kind of difficult to play with your bigs. But you've got to find a way to be more effective offensively. In case they just couldn't do it, and they're going to need to do it. You can't just be missing layups. You can't be shooting contested threes when you've got a 3-on-2 on a fast break. You can't be doing those things. Like, you have to be smarter. You have to be better. And they're not there. Can they get there? They have plays. They got time. They still have time to get there, but they're going to have to get there because the way that they're playing offensively right now, it's just not going to cut it. You're not going to win consistently enough with your offense being as sporadic as it is. Yeah, K-State's got some guys who can get hot. We saw with Noel. in that second game against Illinois, he was able to string some shots together. And I mean, they got guys that can do that. We know Mike McGurl can get hot. Mm-hmm. We know that Nigel Pack can get hot. Like, we know these can happen, and you can ride those guys for a little bit. But that's not consistent. That's not going to consistently lead to success. You've got to be better on the offensive side of the ball. You've got to get high percentage looks. You've got to get better movement. You got to get better movement there. I do think it will help when they're healthier down low. You can get some more of those rebounds. You can get some more of those high percentage looks. But I will give K-State credit. It seems like they were hitting free throws. And it seems like a lot of times we're talking about K-State not hitting free throws. And it seems like they did at least hit some free throws in Kansas City. So hopefully that trend can continue. Because with K-State being kind of offensively challenged, they're going to need to get to the line and make some free throws. And that's been a struggle for K-State for as long as I can ever remember. So, hopefully that's a positive too. It's one of those things where you lose both of them. You can tell this team's better than they were last year. There's no doubt about it. But you can also tell this can't be the final product. Or K-State's not going to end up where they need to be. So we'll see what they do when they bounce back. And fortunately, they got a couple winnable games here in North Dakota and Albany to kind of prepare before they go down to Wichita in a couple weeks and play the Shockers.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
That is right. North Dakota next on Sunday to wrap up Thanksgiving weekend here in the MHK. North Dakota, that is the youth team game for all you youths out there. 4 o'clock Central Time is that game. That's when the next time the men take the court. And then I'll just mention, they're back on the court again on that Wednesday against Albany. And that is the Fort Riley's Operation Santa Claus promo as well. And then the big game, another big non-con game for K-State. Oh, yeah. Woo! Wichita State, 2 Sundays from now. You got North Dakota State this week, and then next week, Wichita. You got to go down to Wichita to begin that rivalry there. The other rivalry game, finally. So Wichita State, that is going to be some scene down there in Wichita, Kansas, baby. But yeah,
it's super cool, man. It's going to be super cool to see those two teams finally playing some basketball.
Yep, finally, yes. After many years of talking about it, they finally get the chance to play against each other.
Yep.
That's going to be some scene down there. And then, of course, Marquette, kind of just to recap the rest of the non-con here, just a non-con, Marquette, December 8th. So you got 2 big games right there, back-to-back, really, Wichita State, and then you get Marquette at home, and old Shock Smart come back to Bramlage. That's going to be another game there that K-State needs to get. Green Bay, December 12th, and you mentioned it, Nebraska, you got to go there, December 19th. That's another Sunday game. A lot of Sunday games.
You read it. I was looking at the schedule, and I thought, gosh, there are so many Sunday games. There's going to be a lot of juggling football and watching some K-State hoops in December.
Yep, yes, there is. And then, of course, to wrap it here, McNeese State, December 21st, a couple days before Christmas. That's going to be at home. And then the last non-con game, well, actually, no, it's not, because you have the other game, the Big 12 SEC Challenge.
Yeah.
Morgan State, before Big 12 play, gets OU on the road. Morgan State at home, December 29th. And then, of course, the new year comes, and then the new year open. You open up immediately on New Year's Day, a Saturday game in Norman, Oklahoma, to take on the Sooners. So, yeah, there's some key games that you highlighted in that section there for Bruce Weber that these guys need to get. Of course, hopefully this is not the final product. There are still a lot of basketball to be played, and yeah, there's some bright spots in there. Noel, the free throw shooting, but yeah, the shooting from the field, you got to make smarter decisions with the basketball there. And I saw a one-on-one a 2-1 opportunity, and then McGurl just jacked up a 3, which missed. So yeah. I know it was late in the game, but he could have just drove that to the hoop instead of pull up for a 3. But hey, you gotta make better. Yeah, you gotta make better decisions with the ball. So hopefully here with this team now 2-2, having North Dakota State, they can take care of business here, get some momentum going, get some confidence going, and get down to Wichita and hopefully get after the Shockers here in a couple weeks.
And I want to say, say there, Eddie, too, I think that this is worth noting. The transfers were not very good for K-State. They weren't. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Mark Smith, Marquise Noel had his moments in that second game, but he was awful the first game. I'm just going to call it, be honest about it. And, Sue didn't have a great showing. The transfers just didn't play very well in Kansas City. I liked what I saw from Nigel Pack. I liked what I saw from Mike McGurl in the first game, particularly more in the second game. Mike McGurl hadn't hit a field goal yet coming into this game. Kansas City finally had a big game there in the first game against Arkansas. But I liked what I saw from Nigel Pack. I liked what I saw from Selton Miguel at times. I liked what I saw from some of the young guys at times. Was not impressed with what I saw from the transfers.
Mm.
The good news is, I do think that those transfers are still getting comfortable, and I think the more comfortable they get, the more of a feel they get with these guys, the more they get to know the system and their roles, the better I think they'll be. So it'd be one thing if it was some young guys that were struggling, but to me, it seemed like K-State's young core was actually okay. It was really the transfers more than anything, and I feel like, that could come with time. So if you want to look for a silver lining is, hey, you got a game against North Dakota and Albany, maybe those transfers, they can kind of get their feet wet a little bit more, they can get a little more, time, in the system, and, maybe we see a better version of them against Wichita State before K-State hits a really big stretch of 3 of their next 4, starting Wichita State, are going to be big games because you got at Wichita State, Marquette at home, Green Bay at home, at Nebraska. That's going to be a big 4-game window for K-State where you've got 3 legit tests on that schedule there between December 5th and December 19th. Big 2 weeks. Big 2 weeks for K-State there. But I want to end it with this. I just have to say this, Eddie. I believe that Wichita State, I'm really eager to see what happens with that Wichita State game and what it could do for K-State, because I feel like that is going to be an instant rivalry. I really do. We have been clamoring so long for this game. K-State fans, Wichita State fans, probably more Wichita State fans than K-State fans, but still, there has been so much clamoring for this game, and 2 in-state schools, let's just be honest, Eddie. I don't think there's a lot of good blood between those 2 fan bases at the moment. So I really see what could really become an instant rivalry and a game that could really bring out a lot of emotion. And it's going to be interesting to see if K-State can go down to Wichita and they can kind of play into that, because that's going to be the rowdiest by far environment that they've played in all year long. With K-State, Wichita State fans in there, in the building. And then what can it do? What can it do for K-State if they're able to go in there and get a win? And it would be an emotional win. And they would just be exhilarated. I mean, could that catapult them? Could that get them going? Or vice versa, if they lose that game, could it crumble? Could it hurt them? Could it significantly hurt them? Or could it wake them up? I mean, that game, there's so many things that I think that Wichita State game could do. Not that they didn't get up for these games. I do think that they got up to these games. That Wichita State game, though, that's going to be on a different level than these 2 games they played in Kansas City. And I'm just really eager to see what goes down in that gym. I feel like it could be a season-defining game, and I don't want to call any non-con game a season-defining game, because that's putting too much pressure on a game that should be there. But I feel like it has the ingredients to potentially be a game we look back at as a season-defining game. So I'm really eager to see what happens there. And I just do. Eddie, I think that's going to become an instant rivalry. I think it's going to be.
Yeah,
I think that it's going to be It's not going to be on the level of K-State KU games when you talk about passion and emotion, but I don't think it's going to be that far off. I don't. And the fact that you're getting them on neutral floors with both fans, I think it's going to be something to really, really need. I'm ready to see it. I just wish it wasn't on a Sunday. I just wish it was on a Saturday.
Yeah, but hey, it is what it is.
And
we're going to have at least 2 weeks to talk about it, and also we'll definitely recap it, what's going on there. So K-State men's team did not get a win in KC, 0-2, losing to Arkansas in Illinois by the score of 8 points in Kansas City. The men's team returned home this weekend to take on North Dakota on Sunday afternoon. This is the Purple Project Podcast, episode number 72. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden here. Now it's time to change gears into the gridiron, folks. K-State, Sierra Knight, they were coming off of a four-game winning streak, came to a close at home on Sierra Knight, 20-10, which K-State's defense gave every opportunity for the offense in this game, and K-State's offense was just off in this game here. Obviously, the two biggest news stories were injuries to the super seniors on both sides. We know about Skylar Thompson late in the game having to be carried off the field and later carted off the field. And then Jerron McPherson was lost early in this game. That was a huge hit for the secondary, as well as the entire defense as a whole, really. But yeah, K-State's defense was the story in this game. Gave every opportunity in this game, but even Deuce's big game, which included a 65-yard touchdown run, outrunning the Baylor defense to the end zone, was not enough. And for Baylor, I'm gonna call this the Blake Shapen game, because I had to travel from my, because I started watching this game from the house, and then when the towards the middle of the second quarter, towards the end, had to go to good friends of mine's house to have game night / have the game in the background. So in that transition, Jerry Bohannon had a hamstring injury, which got Blake Shapen into the game, and then of course Wyatt Thompson and Stan Weber both said that they don't have. It was Stan Weber that said, "I don't have any scout notes on this guy. We're just going to stay assuming he runs the football." Nope. He throws it. 16 for 21, 137 yards. Even though he did get sacked one time, but start of this game, Shapen and way he threw the football really kept K-State off balance, even though K-State did get some stops. Again, K-State gave K-State the offense every opportunity and wasn't to be there. And then, of course, Thompson gets hurt after 15 or 29 in his final game, an emotional scene down there, obviously, for obvious reasons. But the journey that Skylar Thompson's been through to get here, and while his time at K-State, 158 yards, but he was sacked multiple times. He was getting pressured. 5 sacks in this game, and being carted off the field. And then Jaren Lewis does it in lat pulls in the Atlanta Falcons. First pass gets picked off. So just like the I know people, KC don't care about the Falcons, but the Falcons had 4 interceptions, 2 of them by a backup, and those backups each on their first pass threw a pick six. One of those was a pick six, I think. So it can't get any worse than that. And then Jaren Lewis comes in here, and then his first attempt throws an interception. So
that was not a good throw.
Not a good throw. Right to him.
That he was throwing to the Baylor linebacker.
Right to him. That was not a smart decision. And that's not the first time that we've seen that from Jaren Lewis. And we talked about it right before I hit the record button. We pretty much know, even though it hasn't been said yet, we could definitely see both quarterbacks in here. If my pattern is what I expect on Friday morning, which is the 11 a.m. kick, the day after Thanksgiving, folks, Will Howard will be the starting quarterback. As much as we don't want him starting, I mean, that's going to have to way it is. And it goes back to what we've been talking about. It was a few weeks ago about the quarterback position. Again, we talked about this slightly again before I hit the record button, Alex, and we talked about it pretty much at that point. And I gotta bring it up again. You brought it up in one of your tweets, so I might as well just roll it off from there. Yeah. So Skylar Thompson might not play in this game, but who knows? But yeah, I mean, this team right now, and yes, KU beat Texas. Yes, they did. And I mentioned that to a couple of friends who are big followers of K-State. So now you don't have number QB1, number 7 under center. Now you have this quarterback. Will Howard did play well against Texas last year. He did that at home. So hopefully
he has moments this year.
He has. He has.
Nevada. He had a good game against Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Jaren Lewis has had his moments as well. With a couple of the bad decisions, one in Oklahoma State and then one in Baylor. So you don't know what you're gonna get from these quarterbacks. And this is not. Yes, you have Deuce Vaughn. We all know that. Who had another 100-yard game. And, oh, by the way, he's over 1,000 yards. Once again, what a year for number 22. But, yeah, if you don't have a quarterback who can manage it right, the offense right, you're not going to go anywhere. And so that's the big question going in here against an up-and-down Texas team who I just checked the standings. They're in the conference. They're second to last. 2-6.
There's a scenario, I think, where they could finish last in the conference.
There's a scenario where they finished dead last in KU. I mean, they lost to TCU by 3, so they're playing really good football right now. In Texas, they just gone the other way, and they're not going to go bowl eligible. They're 4-7.
Yep.
So that's disappointing on Texas standards, wherever you want to call it down there. So,
and we don't know what they're going to do at QB either, Eddie. They're having quarterback issues. Their two QBs are banged up.
Yep, yes they are. Yes they are. So it's going to be a war of an attrition on Friday morning to see whose offense is going to operate a little better. But what are your thoughts on the Baylor game last weekend? And what are your thoughts on the quarterback position right now?
Yeah, well, you know, going back to the Baylor game, I think what you saw there more than anything was Baylor's better football team. This is why Eddie pays me the big bucks to come on the podcast, you know, for analysis like that. No, I'm kidding. That is very simple analysis, and I don't get paid a dime. I come on pro bono, Freddie. I do think that's what it boils down to. I think that Baylor was a better football team, and that showed. I don't think we saw a lack of effort or a lack of intensity, you could say. What you saw from K-State was miscues, and it killed them. That's what happened. You can't have miscues when you are playing a team who is now number 8 in the country. They're number 8 in the latest college football playoff poll. And so, when you're playing that team, you know, I don't care if it's not Oklahoma, you know, and it's Baylor, and it may not be the brand name. Look, that's a damn good football team, and you can't be making mistakes. Phil Brooks can't be muffing punts when you get 3 and outs on
defense. That was a big play.
You give them the ball, and then they get a touchdown, and all of a sudden you're already playing down 7, just like snap the finger after you've done everything right. You can't do that against Baylor. You know, you can't get hurt by a kick catch interference call, even though I think it was a load of crap, to be honest, but whatever. Still, point being is you can't put yourself in a position to even let them throw that flag, because he was going to botch that ball anyway. And because K-State did not impede him, I don't know why the official thought that he impeded. But anyway, point being is you can't put yourself in that position to even give them a chance to throw the flag there, because he was going to drop that ball. And so, you know, you can't Fitz said it, and it sounds so incredibly dumb, but he said usually it's special teams you. This last week it was special teams ew. And that's pretty accurate for Bay State. because I don't know if you guys saw, but their kicking situation is not ideal at the moment either. Chris Dennett continues to really struggle. He missed another easy kick. I shouldn't call it easy kick. I can't even get the ball off the ground when I kick it. But
yeah, he's struggling.
He missed what should be considered an easy kick for a college kicker. He has gotten to the point where I don't think K-State should kick field goals anymore. I really think they just need to go.
They need to go for touchdowns.
And that's it. You know, unless it's anything that's like inside 30 and it's not on the hash, then go for it. But if it's on the hash or it's past 30, I don't think I'm really comfortable K-State kicking it unless it's like 4th and 10 plus or something like that. He just isn't making them. And so that killed K-State when he couldn't make a field goal to get into one possession. He could have made that. K-State could have gotten a stop, possibly gotten the ball back down one score with the chance. I mean, it was just little miscues, you know, like that in the special teams area. And then penalties. I think penalties hurt them in a couple spots as well. And so, I mean, that's what happened. You know, K-State, Baylor locked K-State up. You mentioned, yeah, they locked K-State up on the offensive side. When K-State was on offense, Baylor's defense locked them up. And I thought K-State's defense played really, really well. I thought it was a fantastic game from K-State's defense. I know that Coach Klieman was not happy with the defense in regards to not getting Baylor off the field quick enough. Or not quick enough. He thought that K-State let Baylor stay on the field too many times. And then I get it and I see it. But I also watched that game and think you can't ask your team to do any more than they did. They did all you can ask. In that game, and they really played tremendous, and yeah, they did stay on the field probably a little too long in a couple drives, but it's not why K-State lost the football game. Their defense was fantastic. Their defense gave them a chance. Special teams just made some crucial errors, and Baylor's defense just shut that K-State offense down, and Skyler just couldn't figure it out. He could not figure out that Baylor defense. He couldn't figure it out. They had him confused. He couldn't find his first read. He kept going to his second, his third read, and Skyler's not to the point where he's really comfortable running yet. So, you know, it just led to, you know, it led to some miscues. Courtney Messingham, in my opinion, abandoned the run too quickly. Deuce only gets 11 touches. That's inexcusable. So, you know, especially when Deuce breaks one for like 70 yards for your only touchdown or 60 yards or whatever it was. But you only let him get 11 touches. I mean, you can't do that. You can't do that in a game like this. And Chris Klieman, to his credit, acknowledged that we can't. He needs to get more than 11 touches. And so, I just think little things like that, Eddie, are the reason. You know, Baylor just, Dave Aranda's a damn good coach, and it showed. And then Baylor came out, they took care of business, they were just a better goal team. I thought K-State played pretty well. They just made some mistakes, and you know, that I think John Kurtz put it best. He said, you know, K-State's good enough to where they can tease you. They tease you into thinking that they could be there right at the top, but they just can't quite get there and just can't quite crack into it. And I think that's true. I think this team is good enough to tease you into thinking, oh, maybe they could be with Oklahoma State or, you know, Oklahoma or Baylor or, you know, Iowa State to a lesser extent, even though they are 6-5 right now. but then when it comes time, K-State can't quite get over that because they're just not quite there. They're just not quite at that level, and their ceiling just isn't quite there. And so, and I had to piggyback off of that. I think Fitz said, you know, K-State's a football team that's got the talent of a 8th, 9th best talent of any team in the Big 12, and right now they're coaching them to probably about 5th in the conference talent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he just mentioned K-State needs to get more of an influx of talent. We've talked about that a million times. We'll talk about it again this offseason.
Yeah.
But moral of the story is, Baylor just had a football team that was better. And when you're playing a team that's better than you, and a team that's not making mistakes because Baylor wasn't making mistakes, you can't give them opportunities. You can't do it. K-State did. That's why they lost the game. Pivoting into the Texas game, though, really interesting. Really interesting what you're looking at there. And I threw out the question. I threw out the question on Twitter. And then everyone thinks that I think the sky's falling. That's not only the sky's falling. I'm legitimately curious. I just wanted to know what people thought, if people thought that it made sense to throw Rubley out there. I wouldn't throw Rubley out there. I would not, I'll be honest. But I was curious. I was curious what people thought because I didn't know if K-State would want to burn, the K-State staff would want to burn Will Howard's redshirt. And that was the reason he did not play in the Baylor game. That's why Jared Lewis came in and not Will Howard. They didn't know how injured Schuyler was. They probably figured that Baylor game was out of reach. I've seen some people say, oh, you've got to play that game to win the game. I mean, come on. I'm sorry. There's no way K-State was going to come back to win it. I'm not faulting the coaching staff for throwing Jared Lewis in there. I get it. I understand people are upset about it, but I just don't have a problem with it. But I didn't know if they'd want to burn through Will Howard's redshirt or not. And so I was thinking, okay, well, it'll be between Jared Lewis and, you know, Rubley. And I was just curious. I was just curious what people would have thought in that scenario. And so, you get the, oh, you just think it's going to suck next year. It's like, no. It's not what I said. But anyway, if I was K-State, I'd start Will Howard. That's what I would do. I'd burn the red shirt. Chris Klieman said as much this week. Schuyler can't go. It will be Will Howard. They will burn the red shirt. And that's going to give K-State the best chance to win, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just does. I think, look, do I think Will Howard can be the QB of the future at K-State? He has not shown me yet that he can. And I know that ticks a bunch of K-State fans off when I say it. I'm sorry, though. He has not showed it to me yet. With that said, has he showed me that he can go in and he could win a football game when he needs to? Yes, he has. He did it against Nevada after the Southern Illinois game. He did it against TCU on the road last year after the Texas Tech game. And so he's had his moments where he's stepped in and he's had a good game. And you mentioned it. He had a good game against Texas last year. Or probably his best game of the year last year was against Texas. And so he gives K-State the best chance to win. And, that's who I would roll with against Texas. Who knows how motivated Texas will be in that game? I have no idea. I have no clue how up they'll be for that. I really don't. But, I still think K-State's got a shot. I know K-State's got a lot of injuries. They're pretty banged up. But I still like their chances in Texas, even if they have Will Howard, just because I think that there's a lot of things that K-State can do with a run game that can really exploit Texas in that defense. And I think Will Howard has a good enough grasp of this offense to be able to execute that game plan. And the questions with Will Howard are, is he going to turn the ball over? Can you prevent him from turning the ball over? And that's really the biggest thing. His throws look better. He can run the ball better. But he's still a turnover machine, let's call it what it is. And so can you take that out? Can you take the bad decision-making out of this game? And so I think that's the question there. It'll be interesting to see. And, if Schuyler can find a way to go, great. Roll him out there and let's go. But if he can't, which I'm assuming he won't, then, go with Will Howard and see what you have. And look, it's another opportunity for him, on the road, against a hostile environment, playing that.
Depends on how.
Texas.
Depends on how hostile.
Yeah, you're playing in the hostile, just the hostile confines down in Austin against SEC Power, Texas Longhorns. They're so delusional down there. We can crack the jokes. It would be an opportunity. It would be another good opportunity for Will Howard to, like it or not, I think he's probably going to be the QB for this team next year. And, I know. And trust me, Eddie, don't say that on Twitter or you'll get attacked. But that's just the truth of the matter, so it could be a good opportunity. Could be a good opportunity for him. I still think K-State can do some things. They just need to have a good game plan, Eddie, and I just don't know if Courtney Messingham could put together a game plan that I'm confident enough in. That's the problem. Dude's won like 11 touches against Baylor. I mean, that's just inexcusable. When Skyler's struggling to throw the ball the way he is, you only get Deuce 11 touches. That makes no sense. That makes absolutely no sense to me. And so, yeah, you can't do that. You cannot do that against Texas, especially if you're without Skyler. You've got to lean on Deuce, and you've got to find creative ways to get at the ball. Can you do that? Can you do that? Courtney Messingham. I don't know. I applauded him for kind of putting his foot back on the gas pedal there against West Virginia and came out. And I don't know. I just wasn't a big fan of what he was doing against Baylor. And I think he struggled against Baylor was they didn't adjust what Baylor was doing defensively. Offensively, they couldn't adjust. They could not make the adjustment to counter what Baylor was doing. And Chris Kleiman, again, said, we should have been able to counter quicker than we did to what Baylor was doing defensively. Gotta be better. Gotta be better there. You've just got to be better there. You can't. You've got to be able to make those adjustments, especially when you're losing the talent battle. And so, and if you're going to be without Skyler, you definitely got to be able to do that against Texas. Because, Tim Fitzgerald mentioned it. There's a big difference between 7-5 and 8-4. There is. I mean, the seasons feel different. Definitely, they do. And so, it's a big game. It's a big game for K-State. It's a game that I think if K-State can get that win, they can get to 8-4. Going into the bowl game, you're putting yourself in a position for a real nice bowl. And I think your K-State fans are feeling pretty good. You're feeling pretty good about the way that K-State bounced back this season. Not that you wouldn't if they lose to Texas and finishing 7-5. 7-5 is nothing to be ashamed of. But if K-State could bounce back with an 8-4 season after what happened last year, that would be big time because they were 8-4 the year before. So you'd be feeling a lot better about Coach Klein and what his coaching staff was doing. So it's a big game, Eddie. It's a big game and good opportunity to get some young guys some experience and against Texas and try to get a win. So I'm definitely eager to see what happens there.
Number one. From the number one college town in the Big 12. Big 12. We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Obviously, 8 wins does sound better than 7, but hey, at the beginning of the year, I had them at 8 wins, so it's going to be pretty close to it now. They can get, you can't lose to a 4-7 team. I don't care who it is, either it's Texas or somebody else. Now, it's a huge game for K-State to get, and again, we're going back to the whole Courtney Messingham thing again. Not using players in certain situations. Going back to Deuce Vaughn real quick, he did have in the air 5 catches for 37 yards. So that's 11 plus 5, 16 touches there.
You were correct. I should have said 11 carries. You are absolutely correct. He did get some catches, so he did get about 15 or 16 touches.
Yeah, but still 11 touches is still on the ground not enough there. So I am with you on that as well. And Joel Irvin, who's been a good complimentary back this year, the 1-2 punch there, only 2 touches for him in the game. So, yeah, you kind of wonder.
I will say this, though, to give Courtney Messingham a little bit of a break. K-State only ran 50 some plays in this game. Baylor ran about 30 more plays than K-State did in this game. Which, by the way, that's another way to lose a game. Have the other team run 30 more plays. That's a great way to have it happen. And that's what Coach Kleiman is talking about. K-State defense not getting off the field. Baylor got all those extra plays, and K-State only gets 50 some plays on offense. So it's not like K-State was getting 65, 70 plays the way that you made a typical game. They're getting 50, 20 less plays. Still, though, when you've got 50-some plays and only 11 of them are, 20% of them are carries to your best player, you need to still get them some more. But I will give Courtney Messingham a little bit of a break because they did not get a lot of plays in that game.
Yeah, and a time of possession pretty much proof of that. Baylor had the ball almost 36 minutes. The K-State's 24. Yeah, big difference. Usually, K-State wins the battle.
Usually flips,
so that's definitely alarming there in that game there. So, I mean, they're going to have to find a way to at least keep Texas. You know, Texas is going to at least put up some points in this game. You're going to have to keep them off the field. And the last time that Texas won a football game, you got to go back to October, the beginning of October, when they took care of TCU at TCU, 37-27. They were on a six-game losing streak. I was stunned. To be honest with you, I was stunned when doing a little research, basic research anyways, on Texas, a six-game losing streak heading into Friday.
It's been six games. They beat Texas Tech and TCU early on in the season, and they just have not been able to get anything going since then. And that's why I just don't know what to expect, Eddie. I really don't know what to expect, because I know Texas has the talent of, obviously, an upper half Pac-12 team. We saw it early in the season with the way that they were playing. I mean, they got a great win against Louisiana, who might be their only loss of the year. If not, then they only have like two losses. But they got a dominating win against Louisiana, which is a good team. They got some really nice wins early. They just destroyed Texas Tech at home by 30-some points. And then they get a gritty win down at TCU, back when TCU is still healthy. And then you look and the wheels just kind of came flying off. They just about beat Oklahoma. We saw what happened in the Cotton Bowl. They were dominating in that game. And then the wheels kind of came off in the Cotton Bowl, and then the wheels just kind of came off the Texas Longhorns after that. They just never were able to bounce back from that. So I just don't know what what to expect. I really don't. How motivated will they be? How motivated will the crowd be? I just don't know, Eddie. I really do not know how to gauge this game. It's so hard to figure out, because if you take off, who has got the better talent? Oh my gosh, Texas.
Yeah, Texas by far has the better talent. Yeah,
way more talented. Way, way more talented.
Or should be more talented on paper.
Texas has the better coaching staff as well, but they're not coaching like it right now. And K-State is doing a good job for the most part from coaching, and they are playing as a team. So it's tough to gauge. But I will say what you said, Eddie. If K-State wants to be the type of team that they claim that they are this year, you beat a 4-17.
You gotta do it, in my opinion.
It doesn't matter the name on the jersey. It doesn't matter if you're on the road. It doesn't matter if you're the underdog. Because K-State is the underdog. Texas is favored by 3. None of that matters. It doesn't matter if you've got your backup QB. It doesn't matter. If you want to be looked at as one of the top half team in the Big 12, you win this game. Period. So, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and just to put a finish on Baylor before I continue my thought on K-State hitting this game. Yeah, so Baylor still in a good position to possibly reach the Big 12 championship game if Oklahoma loses to OSU. Obviously, Baylor lost to Oklahoma State, but Baylor has a tiebreaker on Oklahoma because they beat them. We talked about that a little bit last week on last week's podcast. There's a Baylor in prime position there. Meanwhile, K-State focusing on this Texas game. K-State, again, go back to what you just said. You want to be a good top half of the program in the Big 12. You have to take care of business here. Yeah, and part of me is wondering how Texas will come out, but I'm worried about how K-State needs to come out on their own play. K-State and Iowa State have identical conference records at 4-4. You had an opportunity to, if Iowa State somehow stumbles, I don't know who they're playing this weekend, but if K-State can win this game, pull it however they can get it against Texas, whether it's a close game or they can win by a couple of scores or whatever, if they can pull out this game, they're going to be in the top half of the Big 12. That's a big deal there. That's a big deal.
Especially coming
after last year. Yep, big deal there. You're sitting 5-4, 8-4, heading into a possible good bowl. So you got that going for you right there. Meanwhile, Texas lost to West Virginia in Morgantown last weekend, by the way, by a score of 31-23. There for them, so they gotta come back home, and they're basically ain't playing for anything. So yeah, that's the other 20% of me. The other 60% of me is all about K-State, but on my scale, 20%, is wondering how Texas will come out. I mean, I don't know. That's the unknown. We'll find out here in less than about 48 hours, though, how they're going to come out. That is for sure. For K-State in this game, they're going to have to start off fast in this game. There's just no way around it. They have just what they did 2 years ago, but again, going back that far, Chris Klieman's first year, they had Texas on the ropes, and you couldn't finish. You could not finish a deal. Now, 2 years, fast forward to now, you have an opportunity to redeem yourself and to get a big win in Austin. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. If KU can go in there and do it, why not K-State go in there and do it, take care of business there and get it done? I mean, figure out a way, a game plan for around Will Howard. Will Howard has to do his thing, not turn the ball over. You hit on it, Alex. Right smack on the money. You can't turn the ball over. You cannot give still a good Texas offense extra possessions. You cannot do it. Otherwise, you're in trouble. You're in trouble in this game. And I like the way K-State's defense has been playing. So I suspect – I don't know who's going to start. And by the way, I don't even know who's going to start at quarterback for Texas. But going back to the going back real quick to the defense here real quick, the top five tacklers. Ross Elder, big game last week. 10 tackles, 9 of them solo. Big game for Ross Elder there. Probably one of his best games in his K-State career. Really stepping up for J-Mac. Deion Green, as Deion Green does, 9 tackles. He and Cody Fletcher, the tackling machines on his team as they are, both with 9 tackles. Rush East had another big game in the secondary with 6 tackles. 5 of them were solo. 1 of them was an assist. And Felix Nduki-Uzama, another big game for him. He had 5 tackles in this game. Did not, wait a minute, he had half a sack. He had a half a sack in this one. No, he didn't. He had a sack. He had a tackle for loss, my bad. I'm looking at the wrong column there. But Felix right there, another big game for him as well. So I don't even know the status of McPherson in this game either. I'm sure the way that looked, I don't think he's going to be even able to play either.
Yeah, so. Coach Klieman said he was going to be a game-time decision, and they would see how he did this week. But, gosh, seeing his injury, it'd be hard to see him going. So, he said Skyler could, but we'll see. If not, Will Howard. I take that as probably Will Howard. And then, he said J-Mac will probably be game-time decision. And so, I'm not exactly sure with that one either. But the J-Mac injury, too, he got hurt, by the way, getting tangled up with an official. So you want to talk about, the dumbest of injuries. That's just unfortunate that happened to him. But, yeah, I think it'll be a game-time decision, but I'm with you, Eddie. I still think it'll be a stretch if he goes.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see. We'll keep our eyes out on the injury report here leading up to kickoff. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Previewing Texas here as K-State looking to get the 8 wins the day after Thanksgiving. Alex Aiden, my co-host here for a few more minutes on the podcast here. Casey Thompson for Texas, almost is thrown for 2,000 yards. He's exactly 19,043. But the biggest loss for them is Bijan Robinson, who tore up K-State. You've heard me say this a jillion times since that big game, since Texas dropped 69 points or 70 or whatever that was.
It was bad.
Yeah, Bijan Robinson was a big part of that. Loss for the season against KU with a dislocated elbow. Xavier Worthy, leading receiver for Texas with 916 yards. Tackles on defense. The Marvion Overshone, linebacker with 74 tackles. And then B.J. Foster leads the team in interceptions with 3. So there's some little stats there for Texas on that front there. So yeah, I mean, K-State going into this game, they're gonna need to do cause some turnovers on defense, and they've been really playing well here ever since K-State went 0-3 in the conference. They've really turned around their play. It's going to be interesting to see what they do, whoever's at quarterback at Texas, coming up here on Friday here as I'm trying. Let's see if I can get the rest of the Big 12 schedule up while I have it here on my other tab here. Let's see, I'm going to switch it over. I'm doing two things at one time here. Okay, so here's the Big 12 lineup here, folks. Obviously, K-State Texas kicks things off during Thanksgiving weekend on Friday at 11 a.m. kick. Yes, that's right, folks. 11 a.m. K-State Nation. And then who also plays? Iowa State, TCU in Ames. This one, K-State fans probably will tune into as well because, but first, we got to take care of our own business first. And then TCU can somehow go in there and pull off the upset there. They will be bowl eligible. And not only that, K-State will jump Iowa State. So there's a lot still at stake for the Wildcats, Alex, in that department. That is Friday's games.
Yeah, exactly. You can finish fourth. I mean, you know, it's a stretch. It's a stretch with to have TCU go to Iowa State and win, but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's not out of the realm, though.
And you know, if K-State could find a way to get that game and finish fourth in the conference, they'd be finished fourth behind the three teams that were in the top ten. Because I mean, right now you've got Oklahoma State at 7, and you've got Baylor at 8, and you've got Oklahoma at 10. So you know, if you can come in behind those three teams, that would definitely wouldn't be too shabby. That would not be too shabby at all. By the way, shout out to Baylor. They have both their football and their basketball teams in the top 10 right now. That has got to be a great feeling. That has really got to be a great feeling for Baylor. But that would be a big deal. That would be a big deal for the Cats. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And look, even if they can get the win and Iowa State gets the win in case they finish fifth, still got to feel pretty good about that, too.
Yep, still. So it's a win-win. And then, of course, Saturday, Texas Tech goes to number 8, ranked Baylor with a lot there on the line for them. That's the 11 a.m. FS1 kickoff there on this Saturday. And then primetime games, FS1, West Virginia, having to get one more win to go bowl eligible. They're going to have to go through a competitive, really good KU team that's really competitive right now, taking TCU to the limit last week as well. So that's not gonna be a given there for West Virginia. They're up and down season. They're gonna get bowl eligible. They're gonna have to go through Lawrence to do that. And then finally, the rivalry game. Oklahoma State, obviously a lot at stake for number 10 Oklahoma there. If they lose this game and Baylor wins, Baylor's gonna go to the Big 12 champ title game there. Oklahoma State did beat Baylor, so I think they should be able to stay put, even if they lose the game. I'm pretty sure that
Wow. And interesting, I'll say this too, that Oklahoma State game, that game has college football playoff implications as well, particularly for Oklahoma State, you know, because I know Oklahoma State is still sitting at 7, but Cincinnati drops one to Houston, Michigan loses to Ohio State, which I think they will. There's some movement that could be had there, where if Oklahoma State can beat Oklahoma and then they can go beat Baylor and get two top 10 wins back-to-back weeks, they really just need a couple things to happen to slip into the college football playoff. And you know, I'll be 100% honest, I really think the same thing applies to Oklahoma as well. If they can beat Oklahoma State and then beat Oklahoma State again and get two wins against them back-to-back, and so that game's got legit college football implications, kind of woven into it. So that'll be interesting to watch.
Definitely be interesting. So that's kind of a look at the Big 12 on Thanksgiving week this week here, beginning with our K-State Wildcats in the Texas Longhorns. Again, K-State coming into this game on the road, finishing up their 2021 campaign, regular season anyways, as K-State will be going bowl eligible. Is bowl eligible? It is just a matter of which bowl game now they're going to be going to here. It all depends on Friday morning as they take on the Texas Longhorns. K-State 7-4, 4-4 in Big 12 play, while Texas 4-7, 2-6 in conference play. Who would have been saying that the way that Texas was playing at the beginning of the year? Oh, how Texas has really self-destructed here in the last month and a half or so. So, yeah.
It's been beautiful to see, Eddie.
Yeah, it has. And definitely was beautiful to see when KU came in there and beat them. So, hopefully, we can have some of that same success as well at the end of the, when the whistle blows at the end of the game, hopefully. So, Yeah, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, Alex, man, any last final thoughts here before we wrap this thing up?
Not really. Like I said, I'm just I hope K-State can end the season on the right foot there. It's also, like I said, you kind of got bowl positioning. On the line, we know that K-State's going to go to a bowl, but this is a game that could depend what bowl, or could decipher on what bowl, and will they end up in a I think they've got the possibility to end up in a pretty good bowl if you get up some good exposure. So that would be nice to see there. So definitely eager. And you mentioned it too. I mean, this is an opportunity for them to finish in the top half of the conference. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. I know we guys get sick here of last season, but coming off of that season, there were question marks coming into this season about which is the real Chris Klieman, which is the real K-State football program. You can go out there, you can get away with next season, finish 8-4, and then you answer that question on what that expectation is here and is set for it. So there's no doubt that it can do a lot to kind of reaffirm that Chris Klieman is the guy for the job. Yes, K-State's got to recruit better. They're not doing a good enough job for real. We'll get into that in the offseason. But K-State's got a chance to finish the season 8-4. That would be a successful season. And I said going into the season, I was cautiously optimistic they could do that as well. They are doing it. They're doing it. You mentioned that they're playing a lot better defensively. Hopefully they can slow down all those weapons Texas has. Texas has a lot of weapons. Just depends whether or not they show up or not. And so that'll be interesting to see. And then just to kind of, finish things off with the K-State basketball team. Let's just see what happens. That's what I'd say to people there. Let's just see what happens. We can't judge this team off of one weekend against two top 15 teams. No, it wasn't perfect, but it could have been a lot worse as well. I would have liked to see him win a game, but let's just see what happens. Things will work themselves out one way or the other, and we'll get some clarity there. But hopefully K-State can come back and they can get a win against North Dakota, and then can follow up with a win against Alabama.
So we'll see. Yeah, definitely the jury's still out on the men's basketball team at 2-2. So we'll see. As the non-con is continuing for the men, we'll see if they can get better from this experience from Kansas City in the last 2 days this week. Also, the women's team got it going on right now. And yes, they lost. They were very competitive against NC State, even though they lost by 21. They were very competitive in that game. 5-1. Just mini's team, 5-1. Heading into the weekend, so they got some positive vibes going on as well. But definitely the big story here, folks, K-State, Texas, day after Thanksgiving, 11 a.m. on Fox. We'll see if K-State can end the season on a positive note or on a negative. We'll see what happens on that note there. But episode 72 of the Purple Project Podcast is in the books. Alex Ames in San Diego, California. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas, saying thank you guys for listening to tonight's episode. Of course, this episode will be up before the Texas game, so it'll be up a few hours before then as well. Again, another happy Thanksgiving to all the K-State fans who listen to this podcast and those who are not K-State fans but love podcasts. Love podcast also as well. So definitely an intriguing weekend beginning with K-State Texas. Alex, I'm gonna let you close it out once again, man.
Yeah, I'll just echo what I said. I hope everybody has a great I said what I said at the beginning of the podcast. I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving weekend and they spend it with the ones they love, and hopefully they can take some K-State football in over the weekend and enjoy it, and we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, go Cats, and we'll talk to you next time.
the Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.